Hello and welcome to the Raptors Weekly Podcast for the week of January the 8th. I'm your host, William Liu, joined on the program by one of our favorites, Joey Wolfon, always doing it in person, just not in my house this time.
I crave that face-to-face interaction, you know?
Yeah, it's honestly way more organic this way, and the sound is a little bit worse, but that's fine. We are here to talk about the Raptors, who had a 3-0 week.
Man.
Very eventful.
One of the more like purely enjoyable weeks of Raptors basketball in memory, I think. Just considering like how it happened, who they beat, and the particulars, and just like kind of how good they looked at various points during the week. Like obviously, the first half of the Bulls game wasn't great, but the highs were very high.
The highs are very high, and they don't get any higher than DeMar DeRozan scoring 52 points to break a franchise record.
Terry Ross.
I was just going to say, rest in peace, Terrence Ross. An overtime win at home to start the year against the Bucks, and that was honestly one of the best games I've seen the Bucks play. Right, like, the Bucks have this, like, they just have this, like, intensity level that if they reach that point with all the athletes they have, they are really hard to stop. I mean, we've seen, like, I saw the Bucks play like exactly like that against the Cavaliers, and they beat the Cavs. And they actually had made a comeback against the Cavs. And I don't know, the Raptors kind of held them off. Obviously, DeMar scoring 52 was great. I just feel like everybody on this roster had a great week. Like, everyone had a moment, especially the important players, like, you know, Ibaka.
Yeah, I mean, just say, like, everyone but Norm.
Everyone but Norm. I mean, we can talk about Norm a little bit later on, but let's talk about the positives. Like, DeMar, on another level right now.
DeLon in that Bulls game was just, like, one of the most delightful performances.
25 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, and a block. Game high, plus 28
in
30 minutes.
And just, like, the way that he was doing it was so incredible. Like, I don't know, every game I think he does something that just impresses me more and more, and like he's gotten so comfortable and confident finishing around the rim and like making plays in transition. That was awesome. And yeah, DeMar, I mean, enough's been said about that, I think, but like he's riding some kind of high right now. It's pretty awesome to watch.
DeMar had 5 threes in the Bucks game. He had 5 threes in the Bulls game. He only made one in the second game against the Bucks, but he did turn around and pimp that one by staring daggers at the Bucks bench.
Yeah, that 3 was worth 5 threes, man.
Dude,
that was unbelievable.
He got the rebound and immediately dribbled to the corner and turned around. Like, he was Steph. Like, obviously he's not Steph, but that's an insane amount of confidence from DeMar.
Yeah, totally. And like, those are, like, exactly the kind of threes that I feel like you want to see him taking with confidence and making. It's just, like, these aren't, like, open catch-and-shoot threes. This is, like, okay, he is, like, collecting the ball in the corner with 23 seconds on the shot clock, and without hesitation, it's just rising and firing. Like,
that was an FU shot. Plus, that was also part of the 43-point quarter. Well, a lot of highlights.
My God.
A lot of highlights this week, man.
Yeah, it was a good week.
It was. Kyle Lowry, too, had a nice week. But, 3-0 week, not easy games by any means. I mean, I guess Chicago is not a great opponent, but they have been playing really well. Nikola Mirotic, potential trade candidate. I don't know. We'll see. We can talk about that a little bit later on. But, I thought they would go 1-2. They went 3-0. It was very impressive. And, obviously some of the tougher games are coming up next week. They're facing Cleveland and Golden State. But a great way to start the new year for sure. Now that we're kind of halfway, we're almost at the halfway mark for the season, the Raptors are, what are they right now? They are 27-10. I think we can both agree that they've exceeded all expectations so far in terms of just preseason. What was your, coming into the year, like, what was your definition of success for this Raptors team? And how has that changed now?
Man, it's almost hard to remember. I think probably I came into the season just, like, wanting to see them, like win 50 games again and just kind of, like, build on the success they've had in a meaningful way, like, whether that meant making the conference finals or just, I don't know, like having one or two of the young guys kind of pop and show some meaningful growth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I came in with like any set expectations, like this is what I wanted them to do. I think it was more kind of conceptual, and
right.
and that's like where I feel like they've, you know, not just like lived up but exceeded all expectations. Like they have been in like almost this exact same spot for the last four seasons. Like at this
yeah.
point in the year, they always have a record like almost identical to what they have now. Like they're always near the top of the East standings, always have like a really, really good point differential. And this is like the part of the year where they kind of tend to, you know, go one way or the other. Like in 2015-16, like January was where they really took off.
Mm-hmm.
And
the year before that, that's when they declined.
And sort of same as last year, right? So
yeah.
This almost like, just because of how it's worked out in the past, has this feeling of like make or break to it, this part of the schedule,
mm-hmm.
Both because it's starting to get a lot more difficult and also just because like this is the point in the year where they've showed their true colors, I feel. So, yeah, I mean, it's more just like on a more like nebulous level, I feel like they have just done things that I never really anticipated them doing with the personnel that they have right now.
Yeah.
And that's something that, like, I don't even think I could have conceptualized or expected coming into this season.
I mean, yeah, for sure. I think I'm in, you know, agreement with you there. Like, what I wanted out of this year, like, the ceiling for the team was not that different. But in terms of, like, I wanted to see, like, style changes. And, of course, like, I wanted to see what the young guys were about. And I think we, on both accounts, we've had that answered for the team. Like, it's halfway through the year. We can trust that this is how they're going to play. We've seen them, you know, climb up in a couple of important moments, but a lot of that is normal. And nobody really runs free-flung offense with 30 seconds left in the game. Just
right.
Nobody does that. So, like, that's, you know, while that's still an area of, you know, constant improvement, like, for the most part, it's been great. Like, their pace is up, their assists are up, three-point attempts are way up, and the offense looks as good as ever. It's less reliant on free throws. It's more... Like, you know what I mean? Like, in previous years, our effective field goal percentage, which is just, like, if you add an extra point for threes, what are you shooting? That was kind of okay, but then our free throw rate always pushed us over the top.
Yeah.
And our free throw rate is now just kind of okay, but our effective field goal percentage is great. And that's, that, you know, that's a sign of a great offense. You look at the young guys, all of them, except for one, but all of them looking good.
Yeah.
Looking good, man. Even Bebe. Shout out to Bebe for changing that Bucks game.
He's, yeah, man. He just, he's there and ready. You know, when they need him.
Yeah.
Norm.
Take note.
Sorry. I mean, that's been Norm's MO as well.
Exactly.
Though,
that's what's strange.
I'm sure, you know, he's going to get another opportunity at some point this season,
yeah.
without a doubt.
Yeah.
And
in the playoffs. He's going to say
it. Yeah. And I have no doubt that he's going to be ready for it. He's just going through some shit right now. But, yeah, like you say, I mean, I think, it does look like it's going to be sustainable just because I think coming in, like obviously it's one thing to say, like, we're going to change the culture, we're going to play differently, but, like...
Same core players, same coach.
Yeah, and it's, like, a totally different thing to after the preseason when you're shooting suddenly, like, 42 threes a game and you're shooting them at, like, 27%.
That's funny.
To, like, stick with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, there's now this trust level, you know, between the players on the team, between the coaching staff... that, like, this style of play is actually going to work for this team. And I just think that's, like, a huge, huge credit to everybody on the team, like, top down.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're talking about players like someone who's notoriously sort of hard-headed, like Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
Someone like DeRozan who's, like...
Notoriously old school.
Yeah, anachronistic in his game and, like, pretty stuck in his ways, I think.
Yeah.
To take a team like with like those two guys at the center who've been like playing a certain way for as long as they have,
yeah.
I think that just like takes a lot of trust and I really think like everyone in the organization deserves a ton of credit for making it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And like look at the results, man. I don't know. I don't know how the rest of the season's gonna play out. Like it's possible that we'll see you know something similar happen to you know like what's happened the last couple of years where.
Adversity will strike. There might be an injury here or there. It's
yeah,
a long year.
And maybe they flame out in the playoffs again. Like, I don't really know, but I'm almost past the point of caring. Like, I don't think that it necessarily matters as much now because I think, like, they've proven that they can do it. They've proven that they're willing to do it. They've proven to be like incredibly adaptable.
Yeah.
And that stuff matters, you know? Like, I think just like from a big picture perspective, if you're talking about team culture and like the perception of your team,
yeah,
it matters that like you kind of are able to shapeshift and be trusting and build
plug
continuity. Yeah.
Play different styles.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately what the Raptors are trying to build, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like this season isn't just about this season. This culture change isn't just about this season. I think it's like really more about like a kind of bigger picture paradigm shift about the organization. And to that effect, like I don't think you could imagine like the first half of the season going any better than it has.
Exactly. I think that it happened this quickly took us all by surprise. Because, like, you know, right from the jump, the bench unit, which is almost all young guys, and definitely all new guys, really, in terms of, you know, players that haven't really been with the Raptors for that long, or free agents like CJ Miles, like, they instantly clicked. And they powered the Raptors, even when the starters, who have been here for a while, you know, failed to gel a little bit. And, you know, that's been impressive. I think, look, there's no disputing that the long-term, you know, outlook of the team looks rosier than it did before, because last year was kind of like, oh, we got these prospects, but like, who are these? Like, what is Poeltl? What is Siakam? What is DeLon Wright? What Fred VanVleet? Like, what are you even doing here? And you know, all of those guys have had their moments. They've all shown promise. Even Bebe, I mean, Bebe's shown promise in the past, so this is nothing new. But the long term thing looks good. But what about right now in terms of Raptors are third in offensive rating, seventh in defensive rating. Fifth in effective field goal percentage, fifth in true shooting percentage. How good is this team right now? And is it like, do we need to like take a step back and think like we might be looking at something that is bigger than what it is, what we thought coming into the year, and maybe we should make some adjustments or additions?
I don't know. That's a good question. Like I kind of think that as long as like LeBron exists in his current form, you're just going to be really hard pressed to talk yourself into the Raptors being like a legitimate threat to win the East.
It's way easier to talk yourself into the Celtics, by the way. Damn.
Yeah,
I mean, they got
like,
a point differential half the Raptors. I mean, definitely.
Look, I have no problem, honestly, with people saying like the Raptors aren't a legitimate threat.
Yeah, me neither.
You like we exist in an era with like a. You know, probably like the best team of all time, if you're talking about the Warriors, and like maybe the best player of all time. Probably you can safely say like top two player of all time in LeBron. So it's like, you can only get so upset or like feel so slighted about being counted out of the title conversation.
Yeah.
But it does kind of bug me when like people talk about this like supposedly inevitable clash of like the Cavs and Celtics in the conference finals. Like, I totally think that the Raptors should be right there in the mix with the Celtics as, like, the sort of second-tier contenders. Like,
at least right now. Maybe the Celtics are better moving forward when they have Hayward and more experience with the young guys.
Sure. But, like, if you look at the profiles of those two teams so far, like, the Raptors have been better in almost every respect aside from just, like, winning close games.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, the Celtics have been pretty special defensively, but
they have, yeah.
Like the Raptors have a way better point differential. They have taken care of business, I think, like a lot more effectively. Have played fewer games, have like blown out teams more often. Celtics have some like really good wins on their resume. They've beaten the Warriors. They've beaten the Cavs.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Hopefully, the Raps will get like
a chance
be able to do that as well when they have a chance. But I think they're right there, and I think they have a really good shot to make it to the conference finals, like provided that they stay healthy,
okay,
and avoid playing the Cavs in the second round.
Okay, I think you and I both agree that, like, in terms of making major changes, I wouldn't do that right now, especially since, like, a major change would probably require you to chip away a bunch of young guys, and that's just not something the Raptors want to do right now. But in terms of maybe some minor changes, with the trade deadline coming up in about, like, a month and a half, I guess less than. It's just about a month, right? It's, like, February 10th or something this year?
Yeah, they moved it up, right?
Yeah.
Like a couple weeks.
So, like, the trade deadline coming up in a month, what are some of the areas in which you think the Raptors might try to improve? And, you know, what's, like, a realistic sort of, not giving names, but, like, you know, what's the archetype of a player that you would like to see on the Raptors that we're currently lacking, or I don't know, maybe we're dealing from a position of excess?
I think you might want to just like get a little bit of extra scoring punch on that second unit.
Okay.
CJ
Miles is nice, but come on.
CJ's nice, but he's like very much an off-ball guy,
yeah.
And I think they might want to have sort of like a ball handling playmaker on that
mm-hmm.
second unit.
Well, we got Fred VanVleet.
I love Fred VanVleet. Like the intangibles that he brings, I think are actually amazing, and he's done so many little things that have made an impact this year. But
mm-hmm.
I think those times when you've really seen like the offense dry up on that second unit. When DeLon was out, like I think that was when it was most glaring, and it's definitely gotten a lot better now when he's part of that unit and Fred is playing off ball more. But I still think like the spacing's pretty congested, and they'll go through long stretches where they just struggle to score. And I think it'd be really beneficial to have like another kind of playmaking guard who can shoot and who can create a little bit more offense for that unit.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about Tyreek Evans earlier.
Yeah, Tyreek Evans, I mean,
he's a popular name right now.
You were saying, and I agree, like, you probably have to give up a first-round pick to get him, which, like, the Raptors would have to give up a 2020 first-round pick, which I really don't think that you want to do for, like, half a season of Tyreek, especially given what we were just saying, and the fact that, like, that's not really, like, bumping up your ceiling
mm-hmm.
that much.
Mm-hmm.
That would be really nice if you didn't have to give up a first and could get him, because I think he'd be a really nice addition. Obviously, he's having a fantastic year, like contract year for the ages.
Yeah, 19.7 points, 4.7 assists, five rebounds.
Yeah,
47% from the field. The 41% from deep for Tyreek is really surprising.
Yeah,
because that's really all that's separating him from a regular Tyreek year. That and opportunity to run more of an offense and health. It's a lot of things. I mean, he's having a good year. I don't want to put him down.
No, he's been amazing. I think that's probably a little bit, like, unrealistic and out of the Raptors' range. But but that sort of type, I think, like a playmaking guard who can shoot and isn't going to give, like, too much back at the defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
Because already I think, like, CJ has, like, been pretty so-so defensively. And, like, I don't know how much more you want to compromise that unit and, like, what they're really good at.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be one thing, and then the other guy, like we were talking about, was Nico.
Nico,
or just like another guy like that, a stretch forward who is maybe going to be like a little bit more viable playing next to Poeltl.
Right.
And
how dare you, man? No one's more viable than Siakam.
That's very true. They have like some really fantastic two man chemistry.
They're
but,
so sweet.
I'm
going to write about them this week, but
yeah, they. It's actually really impressive because, again, like that unit like lacks so much spacing, and those two guys playing together somehow managed to make it work basically by just like the sheer force of Siakam's like creativity and like his interior passing.
Yeah,
he has these just sort of like funky drives and always manages to find Poeltl under the basket with these like nice little dump offs.
Mm-hmm.
But
just
still,
having the option of a guy who can come in and space the floor for you.
Yeah, I just think when you start to play like really elite defenses, then that is potentially going to become really problematic. And the fact that Siakam's like one for his last 8,000 from three is...
Yep, that's an actual stat.
Yeah, I looked it up. But yeah, it's not a concern right now. I'm like, that unit is humming right now, but fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that like the more options that you can have to mix and match, the better. And I don't know, like what is Fred VanVleet going to get like a lot of run, you know, what like playoff time and when you're playing like the best defenses? I just
hopefully not, but potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you look at a guy like Mirotić, right? Like he's on a contract here. He's willing to be traded away from the Bulls. He's having a really nice year, minus the fact that he got his face punched out. Big minus. But since coming back, 17.9 points, 7.3 rebounds a game, shooting 46% from the three-point line on, like, 10 attempts a game.
Yeah.
He's
been amazing.
He's nice. He's nice. I mean, he's streaky.
Underrated defender, too. Like,
I think
he's capable of, like, actually, like, really, like, moving his feet and, like, staying with guys on the perimeter. He's like, nowhere near elite. Like, he's probably about average, but
yeah.
I don't think he was giving back too much at that end. And honestly, like, that trade only really works if the Bulls want to take back Jonas, I think. So, I just don't know.
One Bull killer for a Raptor killer.
There you go.
Yeah. And then the third one that you mentioned was a bit out of the box, really. But I kind of like the idea of, like, dealing for Zach Randolph.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that sounds crazy. Again, I think this involves Jonas. Which, I mean, like, whatever. Like, obviously, long-term prospects, like, Jonas is way better than Zebo, who is, like, probably 2 years out of the league, from out of the league. But, like, the thing with Zebo is he does sort of effectively what Jonas will do, which is eat up offensive glass, finish things around the basket, and be a huge physical presence to stop post guys. But, I mean, the one thing I like about the Zach Randolph thing is that you know, he is someone that brings a quality of leadership to the team, and that's still somewhat of my concern when you have, like, Kyle Lowry being the number one guy, undisputed, in terms of leadership, and he is 31 years old, he's the oldest guy on the team, but then he's also sort of prone to emotional outbursts and stuff like that, and sometimes he sulks when things don't go his way and things like that, so having someone in here who can check him reasonably, and I feel like Zebo can check anybody, you know, I like that aspect. I don't think I'm necessarily for that trade, because I think just asset-wise, I'd rather hold on to Jonas. But, you know, well, I mean,
it's tough. Like,
why did you mention Zebo?
I mentioned him because, like, for the reason you said, because he kind of gives you a lot of what Jonas gives you. And honestly, yeah, it would be a shorter-term proposition, but I also don't think Jonas necessarily, like, has a lot of untapped upside
that
you'd be missing out on by dealing him out.
But whoa, hold up. He just had 20 points and 9 points.
He does, but, like, we know that, like, he's capable of doing stuff like that, right? Like, when he's playing, like a more sort of, like, undersized front line.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. He's playing with energy and activity. Like, we know that he's capable of doing that. Like, he had a game last year where he had, I think, like, 14 points and 12 rebounds in one quarter against the Celtics and totally turned a game like that around.
That's
so
beautiful.
Yeah.
That was a beautiful performance.
That's, like, he is capable of doing stuff like that. And he is a very good situational player. So, I'm not saying that, like, he's not good or that I want to trade him. I just think there's a bit of an opportunity cost when you think about the money that the Raptors are paying him this year and for the
That's
next
true.
2 years after this year.
If you trade for Randolph, the Raptors would shave about $4 million from their you know, cap sheet this year and also about $5 million next year.
And then he comes off the books a year earlier.
Exactly.
You know,
there's
Jonas,
no,
like, opting into that last year of his contract.
Yeah, that's true.
100%.
Yeah.
So, it was more like just the fact that, like, you get, I think, a lot of what Jonas gives you, but without sort of the long-term financial burden.
Mm.
And I think that stuff's going to start to matter when you have all these young guys and you are trying to figure out the cap mechanics of keeping them. And, like, even starting, like, this coming offseason, DeLon Wright's going to be extension eligible,
mm-hmm.
and the team's, like, pretty cash-strapped, and I don't know.
Just gave them back to Norm.
Right. I mean, like, looking at it now, it's like that, I would love for them to give that exact same deal to DeLon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, DeLon is a little bit more tricky because he's got the shoulder injuries and stuff, but
even so, I'd be totally comfortable with
yeah,
them giving him that offer.
Mm-hmm. I think the shoulder injury might actually, like, make the price of extending DeLon more palatable. Hopefully, at least. It should.
Yeah.
I mean, it should factor in at some point that, like, this man hasn't played. I think he might finally be reaching the, like, having played a full 82 games.
Yeah, he's not quite there yet.
Yeah.
So, and he's, like, turning 26 this year, so.
Yeah, he's low-key Jonas' age.
But I do hope that they at least try to extend him this offseason. Like, I think that would be the right move.
Mm-hmm.
Because he just keeps getting better and better. And honestly, I don't know. Like the fact that he can play both guard positions and, like, guard probably three positions, I think just, like, makes him a really useful long-term piece and one that, like, you're always going to have room for on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I say this having said pretty much, like, all this stuff about Norm as well, and, like, now, a few months later.
Hey, man, you were worried about Norm, like, getting the max contract from the Nets, like, in the offseason.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
I was right there with you in terms of, like, Norm's going to get a big contract from somewhere. And it was good that the Raptors locked him in to pretty much what is the max for second-round players, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
He got the same thing as Richardson did or whatever.
Yeah, it was the most that they could have offered him.
Which is good.
On an extension. So we were thrilled when that happened. I remember texting with you and saying that like it was a bargain and that if we'd let him get to restricted free agency, like we would have ended up having to pay him way more. It seemed like a great contract. And who knows, like maybe it will still end up being a really good contract. And at the very least, like I think you saw with Terrence Ross, like what the value can be of like having just like a young, semi-promising dude with like a $10 million a year contract can be. Like you can use that as a trade chip. And if you want to match salaries, you might get a guy, you know, who makes $12, $13 million a year like Ibaka was last year. It's like really kind of crucial to have young guys that other teams would realistically want who you can basically make like a straight up trade for.
Well, I mean, now that we're on the subject, let's talk about Norm. I mean, look, I think we've already said everything we need to say about it in terms of like what's obvious. Like when we watch the game, it's you could see even on just watching on TV, you know exactly what he's gonna do. Kind of telegraphs all his movements. And that's what people mean when he forces his offense. Like, you look at like how Norm plays and how DeLon plays. DeLon is like all about subtlety, whereas Norm is like just obscene in your face. I'm gonna drive it at you, and. I don't know, man. I think obviously Norm can play better than what he's currently playing as. We even saw it earlier this year. It just hasn't been this bad. But my personal thing now is he just looks glum all the time. He looks upset. And it's understandable. It's not like a irreparable thing, but it's like he came into the year with huge expectations. He got all the he was going to get the starting spot. You know, having backed up DeMar Carroll for so long, he kind of deserved it. You know, he come up big in the playoffs. You know, he was a huge fan favorite, got the commercials, everything like that. And then he comes into the year, doesn't really fit with the starting unit just quite yet, at least offensively. Defensively, I thought he was okay. And then he gets the injury. He comes back. OG has ridiculous stretches of games against the Pelicans and against the Rockets. And so it becomes his starting spot. It's like, all right, fine. Which, by the way, it's they did break Raptors sort of or Dwayne Casey convention, because Dwayne Casey's all about like you don't lose your spot due to injury, and he's brought lesser players back, but Norm's someone got skipped. So you know, if you're from Norm's perspective, you can definitely see why he would feel sort of upset. But I mean, at the same time,
it's
got to do better than this.
It's just I feel like it's gotten to the point where it's just like quicksand, and like the more he tries to get himself out of it, like the deeper into it he goes.
Yeah.
And now it's to the point where like he's getting brought in garbage time for the last 2 minutes of games, and you can just see like he's trying to do way too much. Like he's going out there trying to score like 12 points in 2 minutes and like work his way back into the rotation. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know, man. Like he's too far up inside his own head, I think. And I'm having a hard time figuring out how much of it is mental and how much of it is just him kind of being scouted a little bit better and not really having filled his game out enough to adapt.
Okay.
And like we've talked about this before, it's like the lack of an in-between game really hurts him, because when the defense sees you like backpedaling and gearing up to drive, like, what are you doing to throw them off balance, you know, when they're throwing extra guys at you and, like, he's getting stripped, I think, on a lot of these drives, and, like, straight up losing the ball sometimes, getting challenged at the rim and, like, not really being able to finish and not necessarily, like, having the vision to, like, kick it out to open shooters, more so just kind of, like, putting his head down and trying to get to the rim. And, like, you admire the determination on the one hand. He's like, I am going to get this bucket. I'm going to get to the rim. I'm going to score. And it's just, like, it's not really getting him anywhere, because he just, like, doesn't have enough variety. Like, he doesn't have, like, a pull-up game. He doesn't have a floater. It's, like, he's catching and shooting, or he's barreling to the rim.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, like, explosiveness, I think, can only get you so far. Like, it's not that hard to game plan for a guy who's only doing one of two things.
Yeah. And this is the thing, like, his weaknesses are, like you said, like they're definitely coming to the forefront. But I think it's a couple things. I mean, like, obviously, Norwood's not a perfect player. I don't think anyone ever promised him to be a perfect player, right? Like, the outside shot, I mean, he's got to hit it more consistently to open up the drive, like, for sure. And he's just, I don't know, he's either passing up too many shots or when he does get open shots, he's not hitting them. And, like, obviously, it's difficult if you're not really sure what your role is and your minutes come up and down. Like, it's going to be difficult to find a rhythm with your shot, especially if you're not, like, a shooter. Like, it's different if CJ Miles comes in for 5 minutes. He can probably make 2 threes.
Right.
No problem. But, you know, with someone like Norm, it's a little bit harder, especially since he always looks like he's aiming the three a little bit.
It's not the most natural release, right? Like,
yeah,
it's pretty slow.
And he's kind of like sets it in front of him and stuff. I mean, that stuff is one thing, but the other thing is, like, if we're gonna be really honest about it, Norm, his finishing at the basket has always been kind of disappointing. And maybe that goes back to what you're saying in terms of, like, he has no in between games, so it's easier to challenge a shot. And he does seem to take a lot of contested shots. It's kind of like very awkward, and you know exactly what he's gonna do, but. I mean, his finishing just hasn't really been sort of next level elite. Like, if he doesn't finish over top of you, he, you know, misses a lot of layups. And yeah, I mean, like, obviously, look, this is not to rip him as a player or anything like that, but I mean, these are just things that you learn from these moments. You sort of try to make adjustments. You work with the coaching staff to figure out a new role for you, like, and then work on sort of skills that would help you benefit and thrive in that role. And, you know, that's how you climb out of it, by, you know, making one strong appearance after the other, and you start steadily earning more minutes. But, for the moment, I mean, it doesn't look good. Like, each performance, he looks worse. Like, that Bulls game, he played 3 minutes and was a minus 12.
Yeah.
And he just gave up, like, wide-open threes.
Yeah, and it was pretty much the same thing at the end of that Bucks game, too. He played, like, 3 minutes and was minus 9 or something. And I really think it would benefit him to go down to the 905 and get some run there.
Do you think he would accept something like that? I mean, he's only a third-year player, so I guess technically he kind of has.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the answer to that would probably say a lot about him.
Mm-hmm.
But we've known Norm to be a guy who is, like, not that, he, like, he's obviously prideful like any NBA player
is,
you know, especially one that has had the kind of, like, big playoff moments that he's had and, like, just got himself, you know, like, in 8-figure-a-year contract, but at the same time, like, he's also kind of prided himself on a guy who's just done whatever is necessary, like, done what's best for the team, has been willing to accept, like, a variety of different roles without much complaint, and I also think he seems to me like the kind of guy who would recognize that this would be something that would be good for him,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
I almost think that, like, he would prefer to go down and, like, get a few games where he is playing, like, 30 minutes a night and, like, getting his feel back rather than just, like, sitting on the bench moping and then coming in for, like, 2 minutes of mop-up duty, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and it's also one thing because, like, he has the contract secured, right? So, like, if this was a contract year and he was doing this, then, you know, it's harder to be like, all right, I'm going to go down to the D-League and stuff. But he has the money already. And if he's not really getting playing time right now, I don't think it would be the worst idea, but at the same time, like, he has to agree to it, right? And I feel like the Raptors are kind of almost waiting on him to come say that, because it's also difficult where you can't really go to him and say, look, Norm, you've been really bad. We got to send you down to play with Bruno. Like,
yeah, well, like,
I mean,
it's not like it's a secret, though, right? It's not going to be a surprise to him. He knows that he hasn't been good. He knows he's lost his spot in the rotation, so.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's again, I always go back to, like, Norm spent all this time backing up DeMar Carroll, and, like, we've seen DeMar go through bad stretches like this. And it's not like the Raptors would ever come to DeMar. And the situation is different. DeMar is, like, almost a decade older. But, you know, like, they would never come to DeMar and say, listen, you've been so bad, we need you to go down with Bruno for a while.
But I think it just sort of depends on, like, how they're pitching it and, like, how Norm is, like, willing to receive something.
I mean,
like,
how
that
would you pitch it, though?
I mean, just, like, basically that it's not a demotion, but that it's an opportunity for him to play a lot more than he's been playing and, like, get his feel and his confidence back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not going to get an opportunity to do that right now because the rotation has sort of, like, calcified a little bit. Everybody else is playing really well,
mm-hmm.
and for the moment, at least, as long as everybody's healthy, I don't see an opportunity for him to, like, work his way back into the rotation, like, at this moment in time. So what good is it doing him to sit and stew on the bench, like, when he could be going and getting some run in the G League and, like, maybe just, like, rebuilding his confidence a bit?
True.
I understand why he would be hesitant and maybe push back, but at the same time, I just see that as something that would be beneficial for all parties involved.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I agree with you. It's just like, I don't know. If his pride is already, like, hurt right now, you know, I'm just concerned as to how he receives it, but...
Yeah, no.
You just got to be professional and say, "Look, listen, you're just not doing well right now. This is something we think will help you. We're obviously in the same boat as you. We made the same commitment to you as you made to us with the contract, and you know, let's try to make the most of the situation. And you know what? Honestly, if we had Norm functioning, that's the guy off the bench that can score consistently,
right?
Because that's kind of like how it was supposed to be envisioned. It's just that he wasn't able to fit into the offense." As seamlessly as I guess other guys have. So, yeah, I guess that's really the only negative to talk about, though. Because literally, like you said, everyone else is playing really well for the Raptors. Before we wrap up the first segment, we're going to preview next week's games. A very eventful week coming up where the Raptors start off in Brooklyn. That's not the eventful part, but you know, whatever. They play
They're scrappy.
Brooklyn is scrappy. We'll be Brooklyn. It's not an issue. Would you rest anybody for Brooklyn?
Yeah, I would. They are going to have 3 games in 4 nights.
Mm-hmm.
The third of those games is going to be the
Cavaliers.
A big one against the Cavs on TNT. And I think I would, honestly, like, I would rest both Lowry and Ibaka, I think, for alternating games in that back-to-back set with Brooklyn and Miami. So, like, maybe rest Lowry against Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
Serge against Miami, and just have both of those guys, like, fresh and ready to go
mm-hmm.
for that game against the Cavs.
Yeah, and you have ready-made excuses. I agree with you on that, too. You know, I mean, even though the Raptors have cut down the minutes and stuff like that, it's just 3 games for 4 nights is tough.
Yeah,
it's tough. It's
they haven't found a rest day yet for Lowry or DeRozan.
Okay, Ibaka's had the mysterious knee soreness, but you know,
yeah,
we know what that is.
Kyle and DeMar.
Kyle's been wearing that tape on his wrist anyway. I mean, just
yeah.
easily say he's got a wrist sore wrist.
But look, yeah, I mean, both those guys have played every game this season, and again, as nice as it is that their minutes have come down, I think at a certain point you should be trying to find a rest day for both of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, DeMar is looking, I think, a little bit healthier than Kyle.
Oh, DeMar has always been durable.
Ridiculously.
Yeah, ridiculously durable for someone who, you know, attacks as hard as he does. But yeah, I think we agree. Even if we rest a guy, Brooklyn should be a win. It's not like, it's also like when you go play at Brooklyn, it's not like a tough place to play at all.
Right.
It's like a nice atmosphere. And they'll be coming off 2 days of rest too, so at the weekend off. The next night on Tuesday, the Raptors come home to face the Miami Heat. The Heat are 21-17, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah, they kind of gotten there without really playing that well.
Yeah.
They still have like a not good point differential, and it doesn't feel like they've beaten anybody good, really.
Oh, they beat the Celtics, so you're right.
True. Yeah. They've beaten a bunch of trash teams, and I don't know, like, I haven't watched them play that much, but, like, I've watched a couple of their games, and they don't look anything like they looked at the end of last season.
Yeah.
You know,
there's not that same intensity.
No, they haven't clicked to nearly the same extent. Like, they're not, like, synced up the
mm-hmm.
way that they were, and maybe that's just because,
They're not 11-30, and looking at the brink of absolute doom.
Yeah, I mean, like, they were just, like, shooting a 3-ball, I think, at, like, a pretty ridiculous rate toward the end of last season.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, like, zipping the ball around and, like, getting up and down the floor, like, just generally moving very fast.
Yeah.
I remember, like, the game the Raptors played there in Miami, kind of, like, second half of last year, and, like, they just got run.
Yeah.
And the Heat just, like, haven't really been playing that way. This season, like, Waiters hasn't been as good, Dragic hasn't been as good, like, Whiteside
yeah.
hasn't been as good. Like, everyone on that team has kind of, like, taken a small step back.
Yeah, they've had small injuries, too.
I think they're still, like, a pretty good team. They don't really scare me.
Okay, so that's 2 wins. And then the Raptors wrap up the week with a back-to-back Thursday. The Raptors play their third game in 4 nights, like you said, against the Cleveland Cavaliers at home at the ACC, TNT coverage, big matchup. The Cavs will be coming in with some rest too. So it'll be a pretty fair affair. Isaiah Thomas is healthy. He's on a minutes restriction, but you know, whatever. I think that's gonna be a big game for the Raptors. Not only in the sense that it's a big opponent, it's on national television, but it'll be a big game in the sense that I just want to see them tested by the league's best and to see. To learn something about the team in terms of how they respond, in terms of what weaknesses they show, and what advantages they might have over a team like the Cavs, who, you know, they have a solid bench, but their bench is like, you know, everyone is 30, whereas like the Raptors bench, everyone is young, and I want to see how that experience goes against that youth, and obviously how the starters match up, and you know, what do we do against LeBron? But I don't know, man. I'm cautiously confident the Raptors are going to take that as a win.
Confident. They have actually like played the Cavs pretty well in the regular season, I think, the last couple of years. The only win they got last year, I think, was like the last game of the season when nobody played anyway. But even like the three losses before that, they were all really tight games.
Mm-hmm.
And then the year before that, they went 2 out of 3. So I think they've proven that they can, you know, at the least hang with the Cavs in the regular season.
Yeah.
And especially like this version of the Cavs where, you know, Isaiah's going to be on a minutes restriction. And... I don't know, like, they have, like, a bunch of other guys who are, like, struggling, I think. Like, J.R. Smith hasn't really, like, put it together yet this season. Jay Crowder is, like, starting to get it together a little bit.
Yeah.
But Tristan Thompson, like, hasn't been an impact player the way that maybe he has been in the past. So,
mm-hmm.
I definitely think there's an opportunity there to get, like, a statement win. The Raptors have maybe one of those this season, the Houston game.
Yeah. I guess the two Bucks games combined is kind of one.
Yeah, maybe just like dummying the Bucks on their home floor is like a statement.
We'll respect them.
But as far as just like beating like the cream of the crop, that's like a real opportunity, I think, for people to stand up and take notice if they haven't already.
Yeah. The Cavs, the one nice thing is that the Cavs will be on the fourth game of a 5-game road trip. And so, I don't know. But, I mean, they play Monday against the Timberwolves, and then they have 2 days off, and then they play the Raptors on Thursday. So they'll actually have more rest than the Raptors.
Yeah, it'll be a fair fight.
I'm going to cautiously call that a win. And then the Raptors wrap up the week by playing the Warriors on Saturday at the ACC. That's a loss. That's just a loss. I'm sorry. Steph is playing at MVP levels. We just watched his man score 45 points in three quarters.
Yeah, but...
What? Okay, but...
But what are they going to do...
Uh-huh.
About Yak?
About Yak, that's right. That's
they
right.
had no answer for him.
You mean Jacopolo.
Jacopolo. Traversing the globe in search of offensive rebounds.
Yeah, and spices.
and he gave him the business last time out.
That's right, 11 offensive rebounds. Also, what are they going to do about... Pascal Siak,
that's right.
20 points, career
yeah.
high.
No, I don't know, man. They caught the Warriors on like a very sluggish night, I think, the last time out. But I don't know, man. Yeah, sure. That's probably a loss.
Steph
playing out of his mind right now.
Steph, yeah, I was gonna say when Steph is playing like this, it's nasty. I'm already having flashbacks to when Steph like pulled up on Luis Scola and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and we lost that game despite like a 41 point performance from Kyle Lowry. Great performance,
we played some like very impossible. Very. Fun games against the Warriors the last couple of regular seasons, so
that's true.
I'm excited, nevertheless. It always seems like we play the Cavs and Warriors back to back too, for some weird reason.
Speaking of which, the Warriors will be playing on a second night of a back to back, and they might be looking ahead as well. The Warriors are in the midst are going to be in a 5-game road trip on the East Coast, starting on Friday against the Bucks. Then they play us the next night. The Bucks, with the way they're long, and you know they're the ones that snapped their 24-game winning streak. To start the 2015-16 season, you know, like that could be a tough matchup for them. The Bucks are just kind of exhausting to play in general, and then they play us, and then the game after that they play on Monday against the Cavaliers. So maybe they're looking ahead, maybe looking past Raptors to their you know rivals and shit like that. But who knows? That's all superfluous. I still think the Raptors lose. The Warriors are just the greatest team of all time.
Yeah,
I mean, what else is there to say? Anyway, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and then, man, take some Twitter questions.
I'm Brian Goldfinger of Goldfinger Injury Lawyers, and you know what makes me mad? When insurance companies deny your claim for no good reason. That's why people call me. I'm the lawyer insurance companies don't want to deal with. Visit goldfingerlaw.com and get us working for you. Get Goldfinger today.
Welcome back to the second half of the show. Still here with Joe Wolf on. We are taking Twitter questions. And also, if you have a Twitter question, hit up at Joey_W. I don't understand. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, there you go.
Get me out.
Follow him. All right. Okay, first one from at Retro Yeezy. Dedicate at least 10 minutes of the podcast to flaming Paul Pierce.
I'm not going to do that. Fuck Paul Pierce. Though.
Yeah, fuck
I
Paul
mean,
Pierce.
That's all it needs
fuck
to
Paul
say.
Fuck Paul Pierce. Paul Pierce is in the news because he's, like, just evidently the saltiest man alive. I mean, look, all ex-players are salty to some degree, but then there's guys like Paul Pierce that are like, no, Isaiah Thomas, don't show your video because I'm getting my jersey retired. Like, man, do you have to say that out loud? Can't you just call Danny Ainge and, like, work it out with Isaiah? Why do you have to go on TV and say all this shit? Like, why?
Also, like, who gives a shit? Like,
yeah.
At the end of the day, no, like, nobody remembers what happens, like, the rest of the game when you get your
nobody.
Jersey retired, man. Like, who fucking cares? Like,
yeah.
Just, like, accept the honor. Like, be dignified. Don't be an asshole.
There's no dignity to this man, all right? We're talking about a man that sat in a wheelchair that came back 3 minutes later. He sat in a wheelchair. He looked like he lost a leg or something.
Yeah.
May
have had mud butt.
He 100% just shit himself and had to go to the locker room.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's had a lot of great moments.
They're not actually going to raise his jersey to the Raptors. They're just going to raise that pair of shorts for the Raptors. Mud-stained pair of shorts. Fuck you, Paul Pierce.
Seriously, fuck Paul Pierce, man. As someone on Twitter said, a glorified Joe Johnson.
Exactly.
Joe Johnson with one championship ring is what Paul Pierce is. They were teammates.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Joe Johnson, 7-time All-Star.
Yeah. Paul Pierce, like, 12 times, but whatever. Yeah. Next one from Pablo. Can the Raps benefit from a trade? Benefit from trading for a playoff proven vet, Vince Carter? Anyone? No, come on. Come on. We're not trading for Vince, man. We're not. He's gonna retire on a one-day contract. It is what it is. Come playoffs, it'll always seem like we could use someone who's been there / doesn't get shook / can calm the team down and make a shot. Love our bench, but worried about them come playoffs. I think this is what we're trying to say with the Zach Randolph thing.
Yeah, but when it comes to playoff time, aside from the Cavs, like, the Raps are going to have as much or more playoff experience than anybody else in the Eastern Conference field. So
it's us and the Wizards.
Yeah, like, I don't really think that playoff experience is an issue at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, probably there was some yips in the last couple of years when they just, like, the offense just looked completely different than it did in the regular season and just, like, imploded. But I also think there are a lot of other factors at play there. And a lot of it has to do with scouting and, a lot of it, I think, had to do with the fact that, like, there were some guys who straight up just, like, didn't play well.
Yeah.
I don't really think it's a question of experience. I think it's just a question of, like, being able to execute when you start to see, like, different looks and when you have a team that's, like, playing you, like,
mm-hmm.
4, 5, 6, 7 times in a row.
Yeah.
And, like, being able to make adjustments and also just, like, being prepared.
I would say it's 25% execution, 25% mental, and then, like, 50% talent.
Yeah.
Because, like, realistically, when you get to the playoffs, it's about elite talent. And the Raptors don't have any. It's just fact. It's just a fact. It's unfortunate.
Point is, Vince Carter is not.
Plus, we don't have it. You know, Paul Pierce. We don't give a shit about it.
Yeah.
Real one, Masai. I wonder who Masai's gonna cuss out this time.
I don't know. It didn't work out so well last time. So
last, yeah, that's true. Next one from Cohen Swinkles. What's the closest precedent for how a very good team but not elite, like the Raptors, could win the championship?
Ooh.
The Pistons always get mentioned, the 2004 Pistons.
Yeah, the Pistons, I kind of think, like, a better comp is maybe the 2011 Mavericks.
Yeah. We don't have Dirk.
We don't have Dirk, but I think like, if you're talking just, like, overall top-down talent, I think you can make a case that it's pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
Because beyond Dirk, like, what is it, like, who are the wings on that team? Like, I'm pretty sure Deshaun Stevenson was, like, starting for that team.
Yeah, yeah.
Jason
Terry.
It was, like, Dirk, Jason Terry.
Sean Marion.
And, like, late career Sean Marion and Tyson Chandler. Like, I don't necessarily think
JJ
that,
Barrera, yeah.
that, like, obviously Dirk was transcendent and the Raptors don't have anybody like that. But overall, like, I don't think there's that big a talent disparity between those two teams. And that team beat LeBron, Wade,
dude,
and Bosch in their primes. Like,
yeah, and also beat OKC.
Yeah.
Like, the full, like, Harden, Westbrook, Ibaka, Durant, OKC. They were very young at the time, but very, very capable.
And before that, swept the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kind of last vestiges of the great, like, Kobe and Pau Gasol and Lamar Odom Lakers teams.
Mm-hmm.
So
Andrew Bynum, of course.
Yeah.
How dare you? That's a big four right there. The big forearm to JJ Barrera's chest.
Oh, God.
That was so such a Bush League move. Damn.
But, yeah, I mean, I think
we got Dwayne.
That's something to aspire to. Yeah, there you go.
We got Dwayne.
So he knows how to get it done. That's probably the closest comp I can think of. Pistons team was just, like, such a different team. You know what I mean? There's no hope in hell of, like, the Raptors being able to do what that Pistons team did at the defensive end of the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So, while it's, like, an interesting comp in terms of, like, having a team without a true superstar,
mm-hmm.
as far as, like, style of play and, like, things that, like, this Raptors team is actually going to be able to do come playoff time, I don't think it's actually a realistic comp at all.
Yeah, they're also way tougher than the current Raptors, I'm not going to lie. And I don't just mean tough, like, standing up to people. I mean tough, like, you know, keeping mental composure and stuff. Next one from DJXS. Everyone speaks from the fan perspective. How about this perspective instead? Does Masai owe Kyle and DeMar a legitimate shot to contend in this 3-year window? I'm sure they want a ring like every other All-Star.
I don't know if I understand the question, but
I don't understand. Yeah, how has Masai not necessarily given them a legitimate shot? I think they got their third guy in Ibaka.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I mean, is he saying, like, maybe the Raptors should push all in? Stuff like that?
Maybe, but I just don't. I don't know that there's a move to be made that gives them, you know, like, any better of a chance. I think you set the team up pretty well for this 3-year window, and, like, this is their shot. Like,
yeah,
here it is. You know, it's kind of up to them now to make the most of it.
He hasn't really done them wrong either. Like, I think from year over year, the team has improved except for 13-14 to 14-15. And even that year, like, it looked like the team had improved. It's just Kyle Lowry got injured and got, like, Raymond Felton fed. Like, like, the man came back looking like a seal. But, you know, I mean, from the years on after that, the Raptors have improved. This year was sort of an improvement in terms of addition by subtraction in allowing for more opportunities for the young guys to grow. But I don't know. I don't think Masai has really undersold, you know, Lowry and DeRozan, especially when he's paid them, like, very fair contracts.
Right. Yeah, as far as, like, things he owes them, he definitely gave Lowry a contract. Like,
he bailed Lowry out. He did.
They
could have allowed him to save face.
They
could have
squeezed
him a max. He wanted, like, $200 million.
Yeah, and they could have squeezed him. He wasn't getting $90 million on the open market. So, basically, he doesn't owe them shit. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I think Masai's done his job, and those guys got to do the rest.
Okay. Next one from Jeff Lowe. If you drove to a Raptors game, where would you go? Ticket prices and availability being important. So, driving to a game. So, we're looking at, like, Chicago.
Yeah.
Which is a nice place to go.
Good city. Like,
yeah.
Within driving distance, like, that's, you know.
Don't go in the winter.
Chicago, New York.
New York. I guess you can go to Boston if you, you know, get let in. Minnesota.
Well,
is that drivable?
That's like a 24-hour drive.
Probably. All right, yeah, no.
Cleveland? Cleveland would be fun.
It's like 5 hours. It's the closest one, right?
Yeah, or Detroit's the closest one.
Oh, Detroit, yeah. Detroit's fun.
Detroit's fun because I feel
free.
Like there are always, like, so many Raptors fans there.
And it's
like
almost free.
Yeah, exactly. And you'd go there and just like have like a community of Raptors fans like take over the building, which happens a lot. So
Yeah, that's probably my choice, Detroit. I don't want to sit
then
for
you gotta
three
watch
hours.
Then you gotta watch the Pistons play. So
yeah, that's true. But again, it's free. Like you could probably sit courtside for like $150.
Word.
Whereas like that can get you like a decent upper bowl seat nowadays for the Raptors.
Word.
God damn. I thought this question said, how pretty is Paul Pierce? And I'm like, this man might be one of the ugliest people ever put on television. Ryan Davis asks, should Bebe be getting more minutes? He certainly made them count against the Bucks last night.
I don't think so, man.
Well, yeah.
And not like, I really admire Bebe, just like, who hadn't really played at all. Like, played a bit in that Atlanta game, but, like, hadn't played meaningful minutes.
A lot of professionalism being shown by
totally. Like, he gets tapped to come into that game less less than 2 minutes into the game.
Yeah.
And, honestly, that has, like, a really rough first minute or so.
Yeah.
Where he just kind of, like, looks very lost on offense and then commits, like, a terrible foul to give John Henson an and-one when he made, like, no play on the ball whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then Dwayne Casey calls a quick timeout, and he comes out of that timeout like a ball of fire and just like has a really, really impactful 4 or 5 minute stint where he completely changes the tenor of the game. And he can do that for you. Like, he, in certain matchups, can be like really useful and valuable. But like, I think just like with the way that the starting lineup has played and with the way that Poeltl has played, I don't know that there are that many minutes for him to scrounge up. Unless it's like a situation like it was last night where you have guys in foul trouble.
Yeah, I agree. Also, Bebe is, he's inconsistent, but he's definitely very useful. I just think that, like, with all centers, pretty much all centers in the NBA, you have to pick the right moments and matchups to play in. The real issue is that Poeltl is so good at doing what Jonas does while also doing what Bebe does that, like, he's almost always the good option there. And then Ibaka is sort of the same way, and he's always going to be closing. And then Jonas has a big contract. So, like, what are you really going to do? Right, like you literally need scenarios like this where, you know, Jonas tweaks his leg and, you know, he has to sit out the second half of that Hawks game, Bebe comes in. Or, you know, but Bebe was good in that fourth quarter too.
For sure.
You know, and same thing in this game against the Bucks, like he got injured, or Jonas got in foul trouble and, you know, he comes in. But yeah, it's just consistently as a member of the rotation, he just can't always be there. But
he's great to have, and like,
yeah,
this is part of what's great about the Raptors, I think, is like they are like pretty matchup proof, and they do have sort of like a big,
right?
You know, for every occasion. So
yeah. Next one from Andrew. Any concern with OG and Siakam shooting woes? Is our upside wrapped up in OG, Siakam, and DeLon being able to hit threes? The answer is yes. If those guys hit threes, they're very good players.
Yeah.
If they don't, they're just good players.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. I mean, I think OG more than any of those other guys, at least right now, it's important that he be able to hit threes because unlike those other guys, he can't do that much offensively other than hit threes.
Yeah. Although we haven't necessarily seen him have the ball that much. You know, I'd be curious to see what it would look like. Of course, like, based on what we've seen so far, it'd be a little bit limited because he looks like an awkward dribbler, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's, like, way more reliant on the three ball than those other two guys are. Like, DeLon can make a lot of stuff happen with the ball in his hands. Pascal increasingly can as well. So I think it's less important for those dudes. OG is, like, he's fallen off a cliff, I think, his shooting. And it's not just that, like, he hasn't really been hitting them. It's, like, some of them have looked really, really, really
ugly. Yeah, he had an air ball the other day, and I was like, what is going on there?
He's had a few of them where he's just, like, totally overshot the rim.
I think part of that is also like you hit the rookie wall at some point, man. He's already played more games in the NBA than he did in the college level combined.
Yeah, for sure. But like he hasn't really had any kind of drop off, I don't think, at the defensive end.
Yeah, that's true.
So
he still makes some mistakes, but overall he's very solid.
Yeah. Honestly, it's not really a surprise. I feel like his 3-point percentage is stabilizing, you know, kind of like where I think you would have expected.
He's still at 39%, despite some poor shooting performances of late. I mean, ever since he went, 6-7 from the field against
Charlotte
game, it's been 0-4, 0-3, or 1-4, 0-3, 0-2, 2-6, 1-5. Didn't take a 3 in the first Bucks game, 0-4, and then was 1-5. So that's a bit of a concern. And then, lastly, from DeMar DeCoby. Nice. It's DeCoby DeBryant, by the way, but whatever. What do the Raptors need to do to get national media attention? And also, Joey, do you even give a shit about this?
Okay.
People clearly care. I just want to know if you care.
All right, two parts to that question. First,
okay.
I think this is, like, blown way out of proportion. And I do think that, like, they get, especially recently, have been, like, getting, like, a pretty solid amount of national media attention. And, like, the funny thing to me
is, very meta. It's always like, are we giving the Raptors enough attention?
That's
with anyone else, it's just like, this is what we want to talk about. We're talking about it. Whereas with the Raptors, is like, well, maybe we should do this. And it's just like, it's just another team.
Totally. Like,
they get all weird about it, is what I'm saying.
They get talked about a lot. And, like, it just seems like everybody who talks about them is like, we're not talking about them enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes this weird thing where it's like, you know, when there's a player that, like, everybody agrees is underrated,
mm-hmm.
and every time they talk about this player, it's like, this dude's underrated.
Mike Conley.
If everybody thinks this player is underrated, like, maybe he's not actually underrated.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to, like, get out of this, like, bubble and this sort of, like, inferiority complex that,
which we definitely have
as a Canadian sports fan, like, you're destined to have. And I don't think the Raps get, like, as many national TV games as they deserve.
Not even close.
But I do think, like, people talk about them and, like, they're on the radars as one of the teams that, like, people consider,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, important for this season, at least, you know, like, they're,
right.
they're in that upper crust, they're
mm-hmm.
a top five team.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's like they get slept on. I just think it's weird that, like, anytime they get talked about, it's like in the context of them not being talked about enough.
Yeah. I think one of the issues with the Raptors, beyond the fact that, you know, like, whatever, you can talk about the team's limitations, you can talk about team strength, whatever you want, but it's just like, what is the narrative for this team? And when I mean narrative, I don't mean just like, all right, look, because the narrative is kind of simple, right? Like, they're doing a culture change thing. That's one thing. But at some point, you just like say, okay, cool. But then what else, right? And when you look at a team like the Bucks, the narrative is easy. Like, you have a potential MVP in Giannis in the making. Same thing with the Sixers. When you talk about, like, a team like the Wizards, you could talk about they're infighting, like, they're whatever, right? You talk about the Celtics. I mean, I don't really know what you're really going to talk about with the Celtics. They're clearly a pretender, but whatever. You can do whatever you want with the Celtics, right? And the Cavs are the Cavs. Like, with the Raptors, there's just, like, not as much of a narrative to go on. Like, they're solid every night. They're almost like, it's almost like the San Antonio thing. There's never any controversy. I mean, minus Ibaka getting randomly suspended.
Right.
Like, there's never any controversy with this team. There's, like, the roster is kind of the same. There's a lot of continuity. And, you know, the ceiling, they don't have the same pedigree as the Spurs. And rightfully so. The Spurs have won 5 championships in the last 2 decades. But, you know, like, that's kind of where it is. Like, I don't know. What would you talk about the Raptors? What would you say about the Raptors in a national context? And it's like, it's one thing to be like, well, we're basketball fans. We'll just listen to, you know, good analysis on basketball. But at the same time, it's also like, the general listener is, you know, someone who watches, like, First Take. And if Stephen
right.
A. Smith can't get amped up about something, there's no point in talking about you.
And the funny thing about it to me, too, is, like, so often when people in the national media do talk about the Raptors, Raptors fans are, like, incensed about it. Like, they're
yeah, yeah.
And the complaint is always, like, well, these guys clearly don't even watch the team. Well, fucking A, obviously not. Like, they, like, have
never
a job. Like,
I mean, ESPN literally admitted it. They talked about it in the NBA. I mean, they talked the same question. Why don't we talk about the Raptors? / do we talk about the Raptors enough? And, like, Chauncey Billups is like, oh, they're never on. And
but,
it's like, bro, you have League Pass.
Yeah.
Watch that shit. Your job is to watch basketball. Of course, it's Chauncey Billups. I'm sure you got bigger things to do than, you know, turning on Raptors Bucks.
No, but I mean, even any just, like national basketball writer,
mm-hmm.
On-air personality, whatever. It's like their job includes covering, you know, like, the entire NBA. So they're not going to be able to give as much attention to the Raptors as, like, the local media is. So their coverage is not going to be as, like, in-depth, as knowledgeable about the team. And it's weird to me when, like, you crave this kind of, like, national media spotlight.
Yeah.
But you're bound to be let down when you actually get it, because it's not going to be as spot on, because it's not coming from people who are following the team, like, 24/7.
Mm-hmm. I think people just want to hear good things about the Raptors. But then again, like, it's even hard to say good things about the Raptors because, like, the Raptors have also been disappointing in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, like, we've kind of seen this out of the Raptors, which is not fair because the Raptors are playing differently than before. There's things you could talk about there. But ultimately, if we're talking about what the next question is, it's still kind of the same. The answer is the same. They'll lose to the Cavaliers when they see them.
But let me just say, like, to answer the second part of the question about whether I give a shit,
yeah,
I actually, like, kind of do.
Okay.
And the reason is, like, it kind of just goes back to what we were talking about before in that I feel like this season is very much about just, like, changing the perception of the team and, like, actually, like, elevating the franchise to a place where you can kind of start to be mentioned. Like, obviously, yes, like, a long way to go to be mentioned alongside teams like the Spurs, but, like, a team where there is a culture of continuity, a team, you know, that can be seen from the outside as being, like, among the league's elite. And I think, I don't know, if you are, like, an NBA player around the league, and I don't, I think about what CJ Miles said when he came to the team, and he was thinking about, like, this weird sort of inferiority complex that exists here. He was like, when I was with the Pacers, like, we saw this team as being elite, you know? Like, I don't really get this whole, like, being down on the Raptors or, like, not being talked about thing. Like, I do feel like other players and just, like, people around the league, like, do pay attention to this stuff.
Yeah.
And that's why I kind of think, like, it sort of does matter that, like, they don't get a Christmas Day game. Like, it sort of does matter that they don't necessarily, like, show up on TNT that often.
Yeah.
Because
if you're a player, like, you're seeing this, like, okay, I got to do better than this in order to get any attention. Like, you know what I mean? Like, teams do a lot less, get a lot more attention.
Absolutely.
And
like, look at the Wizards.
This is an entertainment business. Look at the Wizards. Look at these embarrassing-ass Wizards, all right? Win 50 games for once. I want to slap the microphone. I hate the Wizards, man.
But,
yeah.
I mean,
just win 50 games one time, please. The last time you won 50 games, Wes Unseld was in there.
Yeah, it was literally, like, 50
literally
years ago.
Wes Unseld.
But then, you know, the Wizards have the benefit now of, like, not having had to play the Cavs in the playoffs the last 2 years. So they can
No. The Cavs are running from the Wizards.
They can
the
talk themselves up. Like, they can beat the Cavs. And, like, they so far don't have the proof because they haven't gotten there. But the Raptors have, so everyone distances them because, like, they can't beat the Cavs. Well, you know what? Like, yeah, they can't beat the Cavs. And, like, I don't really fucking care.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't care.
Why do people talk about the Celtics not being able to beat the Cavs? They lost to the Cavs twice in the last 3 years.
100%.
They won one game. We won two.
Yeah.
They literally were getting doubled. What was that game? Like, wasn't it like 70-29 or some shit?
Yeah. It was 70-29, right?
It
never happened to the
Raptors. 70-29.
But,
oh, man.
Like, I understand this, the Celtics kind of, like, have this legacy and this history, and, like, they matter to the league in a way that, in a way that the Raptors never will.
That's true, but, like, what does it matter that Bill Simmons, that literally, you know, Bill Russell and Bill Simmons' dad were able to win all the championships with John Havlicek? Like, who cares what happened in the 60s, man? Like,
I think the league does care, like, from a branding perspective. Like, I do
from a branding perspective, I get it, for sure. They're one of the most popular teams.
Yeah, and, like, I feel like the league has a vested interest in, like, the Celtics being good. And it's the same with the Lakers.
Yeah.
And those teams are just, like, always going to be, like, kind of elevated and put up on a pedestal in a way that the Raptors probably never will. But, like, I just think when you talk about, like, what this season is and what it has a chance to mean, I think, in the bigger picture, it's, like, I don't know, man. I'm sick of hearing, like, the regular season doesn't matter, because I think it actually does matter. And, like, this is
it matters for everybody else, but not for the Raptors.
Like, this is part of how you change the perception.
Yeah.
Is
at
by
least that's how it's treated.
It's by developing talent. It's by doing stuff like proving that you can, like, change your system on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
It's stuff like having the same coach for 7 fucking years in a row. Like, you look at the other teams in the league that have had, like, coaches as long as Dwayne Casey, and it's like Popovich, and it's Carlisle, and it's Spoelstra, and it's like top flight organizations that are, like, committed to a culture of continuity, and I feel like that is what the Raptors are trying to build.
Yep.
And that's why I do think it's important that, like, they get the exposure that they haven't necessarily been getting in years past, because I think just, like, as far as perception goes, like, all the shit's connected. And all of it matters, and you're trying to build something, so, you know, you kind of need, like, all the pieces to fit together.
There you go. Joe Wolfaut to replace John Skipper at ESPN. All right? All right, so it's a new day. Anyway.
82 Raptors games a year.
Oh, I can't wait, baby. I cannot wait. Yeah, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Man, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Follow Wolf on at Joey_W. I've explained it many times. You'll figure it out.
Yeah. One of these days, I'm just going to change it. So
It's your brand now.
I guess.
You know, your pinned tweet is about the Raptors Young. So that was about a month ago.
I haven't written anything as good as that since, so
right,
I guess it's going to leave it up.
You stayed up until like 5 a.m. in the morning to write that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give me a follow on Twitter. And
a lot of good Raptors stuff. And a lot of good tennis stuff. I mean, this is not the peak season for tennis by any means.
Tennis is back. After a very brief offseason. And the Australian Open is coming up. So
there you go.
If that interests you, then this is a particularly good time to give me a follow. And
who's winning the Aussie Open?
I don't know, man. Like, everyone's injured. Probably Rafa. He seems like maybe the most healthy guy right now.
Yikes. When Rafa's the most healthy.
Yeah, it's messed up.
It's a real issue. All right. That does it for the podcast. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next week.